Wow, catching our breath here on a loaded Cleveland Browns Daily driven by Liberty Ford. And just because the Browns have a bye week, obviously we're not resting on our laurels here on this show, but you don't have to rest on your laurels and be without football. Join us at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton for the Browns bye week bash. Fans wearing Browns gear get an $11 admission from 12 to 5 p.m. and have the opportunity to meet alumni Leroy Horde and Dick Shafrath from 1 to 3 p.m. and Brownie the Elf from 3 to 5. Visit profootballhof.com for more information. I got to tell you, I'm still, you know, I want to go back if we can for just a second here, Vic, and talk about the playmaker. And really what I thought was so powerful about that is that this is a guy who is trying to make sure that his greatness on the field, which was a Hall of Fame career, one of the best receivers to ever play the game,
right,
is dwarfed by his greatness and the difference that he can make off the field. I think he's going from the playmaker to the difference maker and trying to do that for a lot of young men who have an opportunity in front of them that they may not realize at this stage in life is so fragile and also is so big.
I don't think there's any question about that. He has become a transformative kind of figure. He's been to places that, you know, when you think about it, where someone goes that you look at and you can make harsh judgments and say, okay, what are you doing here? I mean, you were this outstanding football player, but what kind of person are you? And he's come to the face-to-face with that. He's had, obviously, the depth that he shares his story and the openness, the raw emotion, the raw sense of, look, these are my flaws. This is what I've done wrong. Put it out there. And the only way you have credibility when you're going to have those conversations with players or come on a show like this and basically preach, which is what he did for a good portion of that, and I loved it, is you've got to be willing to share what you did and own up to what you did. And he does that bluntly. And for those who were moved by this, we've seen tweets that say people had chills listening to it, in the context that, of course, he had in relating it to his talk to the Browns, that it was so smart for Rob Chudzinski to have this guy come in, the tie that they have together that goes back many years to those to them being teammates at the U. And then North Turner, who was his offensive coordinator. Michael Irvin's the kind of guy that when they say, we need you to do something for us, he says, when do you need me? You know, I'll be there. And he did it. And he gave of himself in so many ways that I hope, this is the other part, though, I hope that the message was heard, not just by us, not just by our listeners. The powerful talk that he gave behind closed doors to those players registered with all of them, and especially guys that needed to hear it the most. And we know, you know, we talk about Josh Gordon and we know about others. They're the ones that hopefully got something out of this and can apply it.
I sure hope so. And I thought it was also interesting that he said he had reached out to Justin Blackmon and had not heard back. And so this is an opportunity, and hopefully that's a lesson to a lot of people that, you know, when you get a guy like the playmaker who's walked the road that you're walking, both good and bad, you have an opportunity to listen and to learn something and make sure that you can benefit, as he said, benefit from the mistakes that I made so that you can fulfill your promise. I think that is powerful stuff, and that was one of the highlights of my career, really, to be a part of that with Michael Irvin here in studio today on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We got Bill in Cleveland ready to give us a little bark from the pound. What's up, Bill?
Love the show and great interview. Thanks a lot. Sorry to take it back to the topic of the day, but I think it's interesting that we're not really hearing any attorneys weigh in on the scenario, and it almost feels to me like, as all of these people are sort of sharing their feelings, that this is sort of a groundswell of potential problems legally, that ultimately this is a workplace that we're talking about. And, you know, I was listening to Herm Edwards this morning talk about how the culture of guys are coming, these rookies come in and take your job, and this is why there, you know, potentially some of this hazing goes on. And I'm just listening to more and more of this stuff come out. And it is potentially another type of lawsuit that could, you know, a lawsuit where, you know, people who got busted out of the league and you know, could.
Yeah.
I think there's a significant potential there.
I hear what you're saying. I hope you're wrong, because I don't know that that is, the to me, in a broader sense, because I think what you're referring to is more along the lines of like class action, like the concussion issue and so forth. But the fact is we live in a litigious society, and the fact is someone may, people may take exactly what you're talking about and run with it. And I have no, I would not be shocked by what you're saying, because I've heard others speculate on that as well. The league gets involved with this because of the ramifications. The league gets involved in a lot of things that we don't even hear about on a regular basis for the fear, or I should say the prophylaxis of preventing those kinds of things from happening, trying to keep keep lawsuits out of the league and defend or nip it in the bud or whatever the word is. But what you're saying has merit, because it is a workplace situation. Who has been threatened or who has gone through this feeling that way? But here's the bottom line. I'm not sure you will get enough players, just given the makeup and character of what players are about, their general, the general way they're put together psychologically. And in my many years of observing this, just doing the, I don't want to want this to be psychobabble, but as best I can to tell you that I think it would be difficult to get players who would want to start to admit to feeling that they were on that end, that victim end, if you will, while playing. I saw, you know, Michael Irvin shared that story with Charles about Charles Haley and that encounter. I saw situations where Hall of Famers were given their share of grief from teammates in locker rooms. Guys who would go on to have Hall of Fame careers. So they took it. I mean, they gave it back, but a lot of them took it, and a lot of them were just basically targets all the way through of running jokes and running imitations and comments on how they did things. They weren't flattering, trust me. But it was, you saw it in the quote culture of the locker room. And this was, I didn't work for the team. I was around these teams as a reporter in the locker room on a regular basis, as you are as a beat guy. So, Nathan, it isn't new. That doesn't make it right. And this situation may be exceptional in many ways, extraordinary in many ways, but we'll see how this plays out. The culpability of the coaching staff is going to come into question, and I don't know how far it'll go, but I think by and large a lot of players are going to be reluctant to want to say, I couldn't take what was kind of being dished out, because the existence of a player is to take a lot. Hits and uncertainty, insecurity, the pressures of the job, the culture of you've got to perform every day.
Yeah, and I've had the opportunity to talk with a lot of former players that I've gotten to work with over the years, and I'll tell you what, most of them agree, and I would say like the fact that there is some type of rookie hazing or initiation, whether it be a financial buy dinner or carry my whatever. They do think some of these things were over the line, but I think it's very interesting now that coming out of Miami is a lot of stuff from his teammates, Richie Incognito's own teammates, many of whom are African American, that are stepping up and saying, we don't view Richie Incognito as a racist. In fact, there is a former player, this is on Pro Football Talk right now, who said that he was basically an honorary black guy in their locker room, and that's how he was viewed. So this is a very complex situation. Yeah. That is going to be, I think there are going to be a lot more details that come out. I think a lot more people are going to be involved in this than just Richie Incognito. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But I think that football players in general, my take, and you've been around this, you're much more old school and have been around it for a long time than I have, seem to think that there should be something, but also would tend to agree that some of the things that are being said here are way over the line. And I know Bart Scott, who I work with on that other pregame show on CBS Sports Network every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern, was very adamant in his dislike and distaste for Richie Incognito and the things that were done here.
He is universally seen as that guy, that dirty player, that whatever, that person, that
right.
Person that people don't like having. But the balance of it is that versus, quote, wanting him to be, say, on the team, you know, want that fire and such on your football team. But he was off a lot of. Bill Polian said this the other day. They took him off their draft board, the Colts draft board. They didn't want that guy on their team. But here's the other part of it. Just what you said, okay, accepted by, say, African American players. But the problem with that is if any part of the text or voicemail is true, the ugly words that he used in that context. How does that square with anybody? That won't square with me. It wouldn't square with.
No.
It doesn't square with any. It shouldn't, regardless of race. It shouldn't square with any teammate. That's going far beyond any realm of quote, you know, traditional rookie hazing. I mean, to me, and I don't know. I've seen it, the taping up of a guy to a goalpost, the dumping all kinds of talcum powder. The answer. I mean.
Are you surprised that Mike Wallace and Brent Grimes have come out in support of Richie Incognito?
In light of, if you know what he said, that's the part where I think you got to stop and say, no. This isn't acceptable.
Right.
Richie, you went to a place because how could they? You said it. It's complex because the drift you keep getting in Miami is if there's one guy they want to come back to the team,
it's not Jonathan Martin.
It's the guy that's suspended, and it's not Jonathan Martin. All right, we've gone a long way with this. We're going to have a conversation. Jameer Howerton from our ClevelandBrowns.com staff is sitting down with Jordan Cameron. That's coming up, and so is Gerard Cherry a little later in this hour, and we'll get Gerard's take, too, on what Michael Irvin said. Powerful, powerful stuff setting the tone for this show. Much more is coming up. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.